We talk a lot on the podcast about the ways we live in and with data, the ways data shape our lives and our politics. Public discourse around data is often wrapped up in the negative ways they can impact our lives. A movement among statisticians, data scientists, and other researchers shows the positive impacts of data when used to work toward solutions to humanitarian problems. The Data for Good movement is a focus of this episode of Stats and Stories, where we explore the statistics behind the stories and the stories behind the statistics. I'm Rosemary Pennington. Stats and Stories is a production of the American Statistical Association in partnership with Miami University's Departments of Statistics and Media, Journalism, and Film. Joining me as always is regular panelist John Baylor, Emeritus Professor of Statistics at Miami University. Our guest today is David Corliss, the founder and director of PeaceWork, a volunteer cooperative of statisticians and data scientists applying statistical methods to issue-driven advocacy. Human trafficking research is a major initiative at PeaceWork. Corliss is also a research scholar member of the Global Association of Human Trafficking Scholars. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be a part of this podcast that I've listened to for so long.
Your PhD is in statistical astrophysics. So how did you find yourself working on peace and humanitarian issues?
The grounding in the mathematics, the analytics is absolutely essential. The connection to working as a statistician for good causes sort of came through a back door. Let me tell you a story about that. I get, as you said, my background is in the hard sciences, but I worked in industry for a number of years, still do. So I keep one foot in academia, publish the occasional paper, but most of my work has been in industry. A lot of that has been in marketing analytics. When we look at data for social good, it's just amazing the wide variety of things that are needed. And it turns out that marketing is one of them, as the story will show. I was working at Ford Motor Company. I was also volunteering, had volunteered for many, many years for Habitat for Humanity, helping build houses. You wouldn't think the two would ever cross paths. But then one day, the manager in the team next to mine was also one of the leaders of the local Habitat for Humanity chapter. Asked if I could do a marketing study for them. They had two questions. How do we find more donors? How do we find more volunteers? And it turns out, I have repeated this story I don't know how many times, with different every charity on earth has the same two questions. Where do we find more donors? Where do we find more volunteers? In this particular case, the mathematics was actually pretty closely related to what I was doing at work at the time. What I did was a geospatial clustering. So I took all the communities in the particular service area that this particular organization worked with. Habitat for Humanity has local chapters. So I looked at all the communities in their within their service area. And I did a basic cluster analysis on demographic variables. And so I had originally done this for my master's thesis, doing demographic variables. It might sound a little strange. Populations of stars, different groups of stars that fit into different categories. Well, I took municipalities and put them in different categories. In some cases, in one cluster, we found folks that very often were very generous in donating and supporting, often didn't have a whole lot of availability to come to the job sites and pound nails. We found another group of communities where that was shifted more in the direction of volunteering. There was some funds to be resourced from there, but not as much. The largest amount of donations they were people volunteering. And then there was a third cluster of communities in this particular case, and those were the kind of communities where the folks were that Habitat for Humanity is trying to help. And so I simply did clustering. I looked at the clustering with lots of volunteers and said, contact the high schools, contact the community groups, talk to all these folks, seniors in high school have to do a community service project. Here's a pathway, a channel for getting more volunteers. For first cluster of communities, this is where they would do fundraisers. They had done fundraisers for some of these communities, but not others. There were a couple of communities that looked very much like where most of their donation dollars were coming from, but they weren't aware of that, and they hadn't done fundraisers there. I was able to say to them, see, this is an important part to get people actionable results. This is the same kind of the thing you would see in any statistical project. We've got the numbers, but the numbers turn into action. And I've repeated this for I don't know how many times, homeless shelters, food pantries. I write a lot of grant proposals now for organizations like this, documenting the need. For example, I just finished a grant proposal for a food bank. In that particular case, there were a number of COVID-era extra support programs that had just expired, and the community food pantry was under very great duress. The community was under duress, and they needed support from foundations to make up the difference to continue to deliver on this growing need. Well, I'm a time series guy. I was able to document how this had shifted over time. It really gives a story of, you know, how I got connected. It's my own personal story, but it's the story for so many other folks working in Data for Good. Find an organization you already work with. Maybe you're volunteering at your kid's school. Maybe you're singing in the choir, working for Habitat for Humanity or some other group. Find the folks that already know you, where you have an established relationship, and then bring analytics to the table. I had volunteered bang and nail for Habitat for Humanity for 15 years, and then I found out that I could make an even greater impact when the thing that I volunteered was my analytics.
That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that and giving us some of that backstory. I got to ask, did they get more money and did they get more volunteers? I mean, do you do the follow up to see if you've been successful in terms of some of the advice that you've provided to these organizations?
I'm a time series guy, and so that would be an essential part of it. Yes, we do the follow up.
And did they did that Habitat group, it was successful?
I had recommended one particular community where they hadn't done fundraisers before. They really didn't have any of their leaders, their key members that lived in that particular community, but it had a profile that looked like the communities where most of the donors were coming from. I said, go do a fundraiser over there. They did one. It was very successful. I've talked about outreach to community organizations, high schools, other groups, different civic groups, in places where they were getting a lot of volunteers already. They got even more volunteers by connecting with those local groups that had people who could volunteer for Habitat for Humanity.
So on the podcast, we've had people in the past who are doing public-facing work or work similar to this. And when I was preparing for this conversation, I did a lot of research trying to figure out, okay, how are we conceptualizing Data for Good? What is it? What is this movement? And, you know, like there are so many different websites that are proponents of this approach to data work. I wonder for you, when you're explaining to people what Data for Good is, how do you describe it? How are you conceptualizing it for people?
Data for Good is using our analytic skills to make a difference in people's lives. A lot of folks, I mean, there are thousands and thousands of folks who are doing Data for Good every day. They're working in healthcare. They're doing biostatistics. They're doing environmental analysis. Very often when I'm using the term Data for Good, I'm talking about a small slice of it. My day job these days, I work for the electric company. A local electric company in the Detroit metropolitan area. And what am I doing there? I'm developing physics-informed AI to predict the damage caused by incoming storms, and that means power outages are shorter, and there's a faster response, these kinds of things. It's helping people. All of this are doing it on our job. Every person at a university doing teaching, doing research. That's the broader picture of Data for Good. Then there are a group of focused organizations. They have a number of different models. One great organization is Statistics Without Borders, has a close affiliation with the American Statistical Association. In that case, it's very easy to get plugged into a project, and they have a group of people who are dedicated leaders, know how to manage projects in this space. When I'm using Data for Good, it's more often these kinds of things. It's very often work done as volunteers. We also see another model with a group called DataKind. There they have a professional staff, they're a charity, they have a professional staff, they manage projects, and then they collect volunteers to make up the bulk of the staff working on projects. My particular area, and this is the organization Piecework, we do this purely as volunteers, so it's 100% pro bono. Now, Data for Good is anytime we're using our science, our math, to make a difference. Piecework has an unusual business model in that we are 100% volunteer. There's a lot of Data for Good that's outside those parameters. but it's specifically focused on advocacy, social problems, and these kinds of things. And so the model we have in terms of a business model is I help coordinate volunteers, get them plugged into projects, whatever their particular interest is. There's a great example, great statistician contacted me once, I'm interested in doing shark ecology. You know anybody who does that who could use a statistician? I knew nothing about shark ecology, nothing. So I looked around, and after a little while, I found a university with a research team in San Diego. They were biologists and environmentalists, but they needed a statistician, and so I got them plugged in. Piecework is about making those connections, and very often people working in their spare time. So that's why there's a little joke in the name Piecework. P-E-A-C-E is what we do. P-I-E-C-E, piecework, is how we work. We break up large projects into little pieces, hand them out to different statisticians, and all work together in their spare time. And the vision of this is just imagine having, well, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I'm a big fan of theirs, can't say enough good things about them. You're talking about somewhere, but depending on how you define people who are working in data analytics professionally, somewhere between 1.2 and 2 million people in the United States alone working in analytics. Imagine what 2 million statisticians could do volunteering 2 hours a week for some social good project. It would be 4 million hours a week. I'm developing that business model to get people plugged into projects very often in their own community. American Association for the Advancement of Science has an organization within them that does local outreach. They're a great way to get connected. AAAS, American Association for Advancement of Science, they've got a statistics section U, and working with them and the local outreach groups is one good way to get connected. The model we're talking about is people with as much time as they're able to donate. Imagine, again, I keep going back to that Habitat for Humanity story. You know, if you're volunteering at the dog shelter, walking the dogs, well, great. And we need people to do that. That's wonderful. But what if instead you did an analysis of scheduling and did a statistical analysis of when people are coming in so you can get the most people helping those who want to rescue the animals at the time when most of them are coming? Can you optimize the schedule doing analytics? It's a logistics optimization question. Whatever particular task that calls to you that probably you're already involved in, the question becomes, how can I use analytics to have an even greater impact?
You're listening to Stats and Stories, and we're talking with David Corliss about data for good.
You know, you started out with this really neat example where you were talking about finding more volunteers, finding more donors for organizations, and that not being uncommon for a lot of agencies that are providing these types of services for their communities. Can you sort of summarize some of the other general types of work that seem to commonly come to piecework?
Another thing that often comes up is advocacy, generally speaking. This often crosses over into the public space and sometimes even in the official governmental space. It's a big chunk of data for good. It starts with, citizens organizations and advocacy. Oh, I'm a statistician. How can I help with it? Give you an example. Every year, hundreds of organizations across the county collaborate to do a homeless count. Yep. And on one night, and so the one night a year, and then they can benchmark this year after year, and they go around their particular area, and they count the number of homeless people and get some basic statistics and demographics. And often it can end there. Statisticians can participate in. I was riding around with a group of folks on at the end of January myself, and then once the data are captured, use that to advocate for the homeless, whether that's talking to local community groups, or it could be talking to local governments. It could be talking to state representatives, even congressional representatives. One really, really great organization that advocates for social sciences is CASA. They do federal advocacy in that space. The American Statistical Association has got this science policy team led by Steve Pearson. It's a fantastic group of people. They're having a tremendous impact. They're out there on Capitol Hill. They're making a big difference. Statisticians can get involved in this end of advocacy. There are a couple of three different ways that can work out. Being part of the organizations themselves and generating public support, writing letters to the editor, but you're going to back that up with statistics. One of the first things I had an opportunity to do in Data for Good was write a series of letters to the editor and publishing around a school funding proposal. There was this really, really great school district. Some friends of mine lived in the district. They had a funding proposal that had fallen just short of getting over the line. They came back and did it again. I was able to look at how this particular school district, Springfield Schools in Northwest Ohio, how this particular school district was just outstanding in its work. It wasn't one you necessarily hear a lot about. It had some financial challenges, not severe, but it had some, but it was really punching well above its weight. It was one of the really most outstanding school districts in the state of Ohio, and given the sometimes straitened nature of its finances, was an example that others should follow, and this deserved support. So I was able to talk to community groups, write letters to the editor of the local newspaper and these kinds of things, and the next time there was a vote, it just got over the line, and Springfield local schools still continues to do a wonderful job. John, you asked, that follow-up is so important.
You know, it's interesting because when you're talking about the count of the homeless, and those are the point in time counts that are being done every year. And I've been involved with the local group that does this and been involved with helping go through and do some of the analysis with them to try to just do some simple description of what they're seeing and what this looks like and help tell that story. So for me personally, it's very satisfying to be able to use skills and to use kind of perspectives that we have from our discipline to try to help organizations and then ultimately help a community in need. And I think that's that there's this great return on such a small investment. So I say kudos to what you're working with on piecework. What are some of the things that you've been working on recently, or what's kind of really exciting about kind of the work that you and your team and folks in this group have been doing?
I have to say I might have given you a little bit of a sunshine and rainbows version of piecework. I seem to have fallen into a statistical practice myself of studying people who do very bad things. As you mentioned in the introduction, human trafficking is a major initiative. This is something that, advocacy in anti-trafficking is something that I've been involved in my whole adult life, something I've been very, very concerned about, something that was so important to me that when I first got involved in Data for Good projects back in 2004, human trafficking was such an important subject that I didn't do any of it for 10 years because it had to be right. And so starting in 2014, I was getting connected with Global Association of Human Trafficking Scholars and others. Right now, we're working on forming an analytics center of excellence that's going to have analytic resources, statistics, people who can go into committees and advocate for new laws getting passed. I've done that myself as a statistical expert witness. Legislative advocacy, which laws and programs are working, which ones don't work as well as we might hope. We can design these programs, Georgia Slam, because of the wind. We can design the programs, but they don't always have the results that we're hoping for. Using analytics, we can put the laws and the programs themselves under the microscope and see what works best. That's been a big part. One of the great things the Department of Labor was doing, this is a current project that I've had, there are two important projects I've got right now in the human trafficking space. One looks at the Department of Labor's list of goods where there's exploited or child labor. It was last updated in November. I don't know when it will be updated again. But the Department of Labor has traditionally done this, kept up to date on this for the last few years. What I was able to do is mine through the data. I did a match case controlled study. I found countries that were, item after item and good after good after good. It was seriously implicated in exploited labor. from that, I matched them to the most similar country that didn't have those problems. I got a control group and I compared. I looked at the differences between them. And I was able to find almost like a criminal profile of countries that just turn a blind eye when it comes to exploited labor. Another project that I've worked on in this space is using data from the United Nations. They have an office on migration. And one of the reasons people move from place to place, unfortunately, one reason why people change countries is that they've been kidnapped and put to work against their will. That's one of the things that gets flagged by the UN in this IOM, Office of Migration Data. And so tracing it country by country told a very interesting story about the war in Ukraine. What we're seeing in the last few years is a shift of many, many more people from Ukraine being exploited, and many of them ending up in Russia as the place where they're being worked. This trend goes back to 2014. We see the number for Ukraine depart from the, remember, I'm a time series guy, depart from the long-term trend and start going up. There, instead of saying, you know, the, before, the chance of being from one country in Eastern Europe and ending up in another country in Eastern Europe, it was pretty random. Going back to 2014, we see an upward trend of more people from Ukraine being exploited, and the place they're being exploited is Russia. This goes back well before the beginning of the Ukraine war. It's almost as if Russia was planning these kinds of ways of taking advantage of folks in Ukraine for a very long time. So this is an area where obviously we know that, you know, the war in Ukraine is a very serious problem. The human trafficking dimension is important, and being able to trend it over time, using analytics as a tool to fight human trafficking, has proven very powerful.
You know, there's this growing global distrust of data and of expertise. What are some of the challenges to doing this kind of work in that environment and getting it heard? So I'm sure, like, the organizations you're working for, yes, but like when you're using that data for advocacy, what are the challenges to doing that?
It really comes on two sides. One of the things, actually, is funny, you mentioned, we were just talking about human trafficking. There's a big international human trafficking conference every year in September. The presentation I'm making addresses this very issue. And I'm, with tongue firmly in cheek, I'm calling it Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics, How to Read the Numbers. And it's teaching people who are working in the field how to leverage statistics and answer that question you just asked. What can be done when there is a lot of distrust? It's a big problem. We can actually use analytics to find what's reliable and what isn't. One of the ways this comes through actually is in the legal space. I do spend a little bit of time as a statistical expert witness. Some of it's for legislative testimony. Some of it's in court cases where a statistician is needed. Racial profiling is one example of that. And so being in the legislative space, it being in the legal space gives a standard that's above just what you hear, or this person says this, that person says that. There's a lot of misinformation and a lot of personal opinion masquerading as science. But science as a discipline, it's still there. It still has its basic rules. Peer review still stands. It still means something. And when it's put to test in a courtroom, it's got to be right. And that really is the ultimate test. We can use the same methods that judges want to see in a courtroom, and we can apply it to things that we're doing in the community. These aren't going to be court cases, but we can use the same statistical methods. And we know they have to be right because this is what the courts want to see.
So, you know, what you started out just talking about, if you could get that 2 million to 4 million extra hours a week of work towards problems, you know, what are some of the biggest problems right now that you think need the attention of this type of effort?
One of the things, the column in AmSTAT News from the American Statistical Association, called Stats for Good. One of the things it does each year at the outset is it identifies hot topics in a number of different areas. let me go through some of the things that are really important topics right now. When we look at environmental advocacy, if you go look at MSAT News during the month of April, if it's later, you can go back and have a look at it from past years. We do Earth Day Project. These are statistical projects that have an Earth Day focus. Environmental advocacy is something a lot of people are concerned about. It's something where statisticians are very, very much needed. That's a really important subject. A key feature that we've identified right now population diversity, especially in marine mammals, is one particular area as kind of a canary in a coal mine of the broader scope of environmental challenges. Is an important topic. One of the things that is very important right now, you need statisticians to do this right. There's a lot of data that's at risk right now, especially in the United States. It's threatened by, you know, loss of financial support, loss of staffing. There's a lot of concern about a brain drain going on as more people lose positions in government. And even beyond that, there's a ripple effect. That we see when the statistical agencies have so much less staffing. There's a whole lot of folks in industry and in communities that need that data. And so there's a huge amount of effort going on right now simply to take the data that's already been collected and archive it. A lot has been done. One of my Data for Good heroes is Lucky Tran, Dr. Tran at Columbia, who basically downloaded everything the CDC ever produced and put public-facing and archived it and put it in a place, and basically a digital public library called the Internet Archive. There's been a lot of work in data rescue. That's still important. It isn't just the federal data. We're seeing there's a lot of concern about data at the state and local level as well. So data rescue is a huge topic right now, and the more people we can get involved, the better. People are going to want to get involved in their own particular area. I do time series, I do demographics. It's one of the things I personally bring to Data for Good. So I've been archiving the American Community Survey at a zip code level, ZCTA they call it, at a zip code level for several years, since 2017. We can find the areas where our particular expertise is needed. I'm not a biologist. I don't do biostat. I could go on all day, all the things I don't do. Statisticians need to be looking at what are the data that we need the most and make sure that data is protected. It's maybe the single most important topic in Data for Good today, at least in the United States. Another topic are statisticians under fire. It used to be that the Committee on Scientific Freedom and Human Rights from the American Statistical Association was very, very concerned with statisticians overseas who got in trouble with the government for doing their job and doing it properly, producing accurate numbers on the performance of the economy, these kinds of things. Some of that is getting a lot closer to home, and there's a lot of concern about statisticians now in the United States. It's another important area of advocacy. We need to support the statisticians at risk. We need to support their agencies, their funding. And you talked about credibility. Spend some time working in the community to help people understand the difference between information and misinformation and how to tell the difference.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of Stats and Stories. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, David.
Thank you very much for having me.
Stats and Stories is a partnership between the American Statistical Association and Miami University's Departments of Statistics and Media, Journalism, and Film. You can follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or other places where you find podcasts. If you'd like to share your thoughts on the program, send your email to statsstories@amstat.org or check us out at statsandstories.net. And be sure to listen for future editions of Stats and Stories, where we discuss the statistics behind the stories and the stories behind the statistics.